The care of the earth is our most ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only legitimate hope. Wendell Berry.
Bending Not Breaking. The live action episodes. Episode 4. Into the Dark. And welcome back to another episode of Bending Not Breaking. I'm Sunshine.
And I'm Ben.
And we are here to talk about Into the Dark.
Into the Dark.
Which is also the title of a Star Wars novel.
Oh, we're not talking about that.
We're not.
We're talking about Nattla.
It's part of the High Republic era of Star Wars, which is the new era that takes place before the prequels. And the new show, The Acolyte, is going to be on the tail end of the High Republic era, just so people have context.
Yeah, we're not talking about that.
We're talking about Avatar The Last Airbender.
Nattla.
Not Avatar The Last Airbender.
Netflix. Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh. That makes sense, too.
But also, yes. here we are talking about it. We're talking about this episode, this Into the Dark episode of not Star Wars, but Avatar The Last
Airbender. Yeah, and that's what people came to listen to, is about Avatar The Last Airbender. So let's be good stewards of their time. And
absolutely.
Let's just jump straight in.
It's part of our responsibility.
It is part of our responsibility. Of the podcast. That's right. Because we want to conduct and supervise and manage the resource of time. And we want to be careful and responsible in that management of that time. Because it's been entrusted to us.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like an ethical value, you know, that like embodies the responsible planning and management of resources.
That's right. Which is the definition of our lens, which is stewardship.
Yeah.
Where stewardship is, which is something I don't think we've talked about, but is actually something I'm kind of passionate about in terms of.
Interesting.
Good use of resources is really nice, especially when it's been entrusted to us.
Big fan. Yeah.
I've come from childcare work.
Mm. Okay.
And so being good stewards, and we borrow a lot of spaces and resources from like other people in the community, like
we
schools.
Sure do.
And so we always say we want to be really good stewards of the spaces that we're in.
Yeah, but why?
Because it's our responsibility to take care of what's been given to us.
Yeah,
so that
why?
We leave
it's been
it better.
Given to us. It's ours.
We leave it better than we found it, whether that's people, places, or things.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is. But that doesn't mean that work isn't worth doing. Especially if you want it to be there for you in the future.
Ooh, interesting. No. So you're doing it for the long con, not for the short con.
Right. I could not clean up after myself when we are in a space that doesn't belong to us, but then that space will probably not be available to me later when I need it.
Yeah.
Are we getting things?
Yeah. Let's head to Etymology Corner for a second.
Let's.
Yeah, and so like...
I didn't realize this was a place we still had.
Yeah.
A little corner for etymology.
Yeah, it's like, you know, steward comes from the root of stig, which means like your house or your hall. And ward comes from like ward, as in your guardian or gatekeeper or et cetera. And so in the beginning, it's like this person who is the guardian of your home. And so it's just an interesting little thing to think about, like, you know, the domesticity kind of it and the service and management needs of the household kind of pieces of it. And that's kind of the original meaning of it. But there's kind of been a trend, especially in the theological world, of using this word a lot in terms of being a good steward, in terms of that's the perhaps ethical thing to do, or the more godlike thing to do, is to be a good steward of resources.
Cleanliness is next to godliness.
That's right.
That's what I always say.
There's an interesting, you know, connection here when it comes to stewardship and how it's used. So
yeah,
thanks for stepping into Etymology Corner.
Great. Let's step out of it into
Nattla
to Plot Point Square.
Oh, before we go to Plot Point Square, we need to go to Recap Alley.
I don't want to go down that alley.
Well, it's important for you to go down there because I went down there last episode, and it is your turn. You have 30 seconds on the clock. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. On your mark, get set, go.
Great. Iroh and Aang are hanging out next to each other in a jail. That's fun for them. Sokka calls out Sai for helping the Fire Nation. Aang meets King Bumi for the first time. At least in 100 years. Katara confronts Jet. Zuko has to make a difficult choice, and Aang and Bumi get into an argument at the feast. Katara and Sokka learn the tale of two lovers, go through the tunnels, meet some badger moles, and then help in this ginormous fight that's happening between Bumi and Aang, while also Zuko rescues Iroh.
Ding, ding, ding. Pretty good.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
I crushed it.
You're so good at this. You, like, should live in Recap Alley.
I'm putting up hotels and people are paying me rent.
Ugh. God, capitalism is the worst.
God, Monopoly is the worst.
Let's play.
No, I hate it.
I'm actually over it. Aren't you proud of me?
Good, because it sucks.
I have so many better
that
games
game
now.
Is terrible.
I have so many better games.
It's like the King Boomy's makeup of board games.
Ooh, we're going there. Yikes.
I did.
Yeah, not good.
We're not at Tui and Lao yet, so I'm going to save all my thoughts. Anyway. Have you played Monopoly Deal?
Yeah.
Much better.
Much better.
That's a much more fun game.
Less than 5 minutes to play.
Yeah, it depends on your crew, but yeah, it's like it can be a 10 minute roundish.
5 to 10 minutes.
Which is kind of the nice part about it, because it's the opposite of Monopoly that is like an 8 hour game if you play it correctly.
Yeah. But we're not talking about Monopoly. We're talking about NATWA and stewardship.
Joke's on you. Capitalism's everywhere. We're always talking about it.
Speaking of capitalism, what is a moment of stewardship you noticed in this episode?
So one of the things that popped up for me, like, that really was prevalent was the idea around stewardship of your own emotions.
Ooh,
like, what if your emotions are a resource? What if your feelings are a resource? And how do we treat those and manage them and conduct them in such a way that it, like, you just viewing it as you're entrusted of your emotions, and so how you deal with them and navigate them and project them is stewardship.
Yeah.
And so that, I really like the way that Katara handles Jet in this episode.
Ooh, tell me more.
There's specifically the idea she's able, because she's kind of worked through some of their emotional things, she is better prepared to handle them when they show up. And so the line of, you couldn't do that without me. And she responds like, did that because of me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, yes.
YGG.
Yes. Love that moment. Love that she's come to the realization so quickly of, like, Jet maybe, like, having some flaws. But I think that's a moment where, one, from Jet's perspective, if we want to talk about not being a good steward of your emotions, he's been bested. He's been beaten. This person has told him he's wrong. And so what does he start doing?
He starts manipulating.
He starts throwing daggers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Verbal daggers. And because of the emotional labor she has already been doing, she's able to avoid those daggers and not throw them back.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. And so, but again, the idea of just being a good steward of your emotions, like, that's a natural resource that occurs.
Absolutely.
And so how do we manage those things well?
And that's so hard, because if we walk through life assuming that other people are going to steward our emotions, we're going to get hurt. People are going to take advantage. People, like, it's just the way we are. And it's not always going to be intentional. Sometimes people are just going to say things that bother us. And if we are constantly just open to the elements, then we're gonna get got. And so I the idea of, part of being a good steward is doing the work, is the way you kind of articulated that with Katara. She's done the inner work to be able to dodge that you know, metaphorical dagger and then not throw back. That's part because she has done that work.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's a mistake to assume that other people are going to be a good steward of your emotions, but or their own.
Right.
Yeah. But I also think it's a mistake to assume that they won't.
Right.
And that's a tough thing to kind of process. And again, where's the line?
You got to navigate that security.
Yeah.
But we also see this trend pop through, not just with Jet, but in dealing with the badger moles later, right?
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
She's recognizing that when I steward my emotions well, the badger moles respond well. And I think that that's another part of that, because if we just treat people as badger moles, which, go with me.
Hear me out.
Let him cook. they respond well. Like, when you steward your emotions well, you are going to create a better community and environment for others to also be able to navigate.
Mm.
And though it is not your responsibility to steward others' emotions, that doesn't mean that you being a good steward of your emotions doesn't assist them in being better to handle theirs.
Mm.
And so that's, you see that in the way that they engage with the badger moles, and I really like that.
Yeah. What did you, what was that dish you just served?
Yeah.
It was delicious.
I told you, let him, I told you, let him cook.
God.
But that was, I think that's, that was a really nice moment in those moments.
Well, it, you know, that reminds really me nice of the concept of, like, when you are vulnerable yourself, you're giving other people permission to do the same thing.
100%.
That's exactly what's happening here, right? When you are able to steward your emotions well and you're able to navigate difficult emotions and, like, do it in a way that is creating safety for the people around you and stewarding other people while you're stewarding yourself, you're going to enable other people to do the same thing. One, because you're showing them how, and two, because you're demonstrating that it's okay, right? And there's a lot of beauty in that. So I nailed it.
Well, it's interesting because I think we can say that for anything. If you're good at some things, you teach other people to be good at those things. If you're bad at some things, you're teaching people those tools to be bad at those things,
yeah.
Regardless of what it is in life.
Yeah.
And this is where it kind of strikes anyone when people say, it's not my responsibility to be a good role model. It's not my responsibility to do these things well. I'm not in charge of the way that you perceive me. There's some truth to that. But to also recognize you live in a community and
ding, ding,
all
ding.
Of your actions have repercussions. Even if you are a hermit who, like, doesn't go out in the community often, like, you are still participating in society.
Well, you're in relationship with the earth.
Right. And so being good stewards is, you being a role model is not really, in my opinion, something you choose to do or not. Like, it's something you need to strive to, because regardless of whether or not you want to, your actions are going to have consequences elsewhere.
But that's the problem is, if you have an individualist mindset where you think it's you're only responsible for you, then you're not going to act that way, right? And so there's a lot of people who are in that frame of mind where it's me, my way, and I'm responsible for me, myself, and I, and no one else. And if that's your mindset, then I think what you're missing out on is the benefits of that communal life also. Right. Not only are you, like, potentially not contributing well to society in a way that is, you know, for the greater good, so to speak, but you're also not yielding the, you know, the sown crops of community in metaphorical language. Right.
When that's, I mean, you think of, even if we look at it in a place of, like, you can say, I live in the woods, I hunt all my food, I build my own house.
Yep.
I build my own tools to build my own house.
Yep.
And I did it all from scratch.
Yep.
There's still a place where you have to hope that someone 10 miles away from you is not poisoning your water supply.
Yep.
Like, there's you like, so no matter what, you're always engaging in those moments. And so we have to be good stewards of what we're doing. When we see organizations doing stuff that, like, hurts the environment in the long run,
yeah,
but it doesn't matter because it's for profits, like, great, you're not being good stewards of our resources.
And if you never go to that part of the country, you don't ever see the
you don't problems, care about it,
you don't care about it,
yep,
you can write it off. Yeah. Yeah, like, again,
I mean, that's just the entirety of Appalachia, right? Like,
yeah, all the fracking, all the everything, right? Yeah, so much. Okay, so speaking of all of the mountains and therefore the earthbending and therefore all the things that happen in this episode,
badger moles,
I would like to talk about just all of the things that happen between Zuko and Iroh, because there's a lot going on here. And so really the relationship of what does it look like to steward a 16-year-old boy's emotions, and Iroh is doing his best.
No.
And so, you know, one of the things that he's doing is he's not only stewarding Zuko's emotions, he's stewarding Zuko in all possible ways. And just really kind of thinking about his safety, doing a whole lot of, like, you know, we see him buy this white lotus tile. We see him eventually throw it to the ground. Steward, like, again, constantly helping Zuko. Sometimes it's helping Zuko to help him. But like ultimately, it's just all of his efforts and all of his actions and thoughts seem to be geared towards how do I make Zuko's life better? And I'm curious, like there's a little bit of like not helicopter mom in terms of metaphors, but like helicopter parent vibes. But like what I do see is this like potentially lawnmower parent of like, let me pave the way for all the things. And it's not that he does that specifically, but there's a little bit of like, let me soften the blow. And part of me is like, there's also evidence where he's like, no, I'm going to let you fight this fight and step back. And this is another example of like, I'm going to let him, you know, touch the stove feel like what it's like to do this. So I don't know. There's a lot going on here. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
It's interesting to see with not speaking in a dehumanizing way, but like people as resources and not to be used, but to develop, right? Like as so like human capital is a resource.
Absolutely.
And so to be good stewards of that, to
labor, right?
To pour into people's development, to pour into people's ability to create a better world for themselves, like that's good stewardship of that resource and relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Not for your own personal use, but just for the betterment of the collective good is like that can certainly be positive, right? I've seen people like arborists, new trees, they will go out and shake them, right?
To train them for the wind,
right? They will go and shake them. And that doesn't mean that you have to go and like make life intentionally hard for people, but it is like sometimes that is benefiting the roots better, right?
Yeah.
And so how does that portray? And that's somewhat of what I see what Iroh gets to do in this with Zuko is navigate the things he can, but he's also not intentionally uprooting Zuko and putting him in an environment that's out of the sake of I'm going to make him stronger. Sometimes if you do that with a tree, the tree will die.
Yeah.
And so you have to find what's the magic word? The balance.
Balance. Dun, yeah. Dun, dun.
So I think I view Iroh and Zuko's relationship this way.
Well, it's interesting the way you framed that early on was that the stewardship is not necessarily for Zuko, but for the future of the world, right? I'm going to look after Zuko and steward Zuko because he might be the leader of a nation. And I want him to have grown up with better resources, better modeling,
than
better
maybe
experiences
his dad
and perhaps
his father did.
And so I didn't really think about it from that perspective because, you know, the way, and I think that's partially because of my, you know, partiality to the OG, but is this I'm doing this for the betterment of the world?
Well, he even says it. One of the reasons, and I think it plays into our podcast and show of what we've always been trying to do is, and it's interesting the language that is used in this episode, my brother, the Fire Lord, only sees things through one lens.
Mm.
And I think that when we look at things through multiple lenses is where we get multiple learnings to allow us to grow and be better.
Yeah. Thus having a different lens
every episode. Right. But that's, so it's interesting that word gets used in this episode, but that's what he talks about. So the idea of that he is trying to create new lenses for Zuko to see things through.
Yeah.
Is because he recognizes the harm that has been done when someone sees the world through one lens and one lens only.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point, man. All right. Well, Zuko, Iroh, lots of stuff going on here. What about you? What's another moment that comes up for you in terms of stewardship?
It plays off the idea of stewardship of emotions, but the stewardship of relationships. And this is kind of what you're talking about with Zuko and Iroh. And so I saw that in Sokka and Katara's ability to navigate their relationship in
here.
The tunnels. When things get tough, when things get hard, how are you engaging in relationships and stewarding that resource? Because it can give you strength, it gives you support, right? Like it's, you're building up the foundations around you, and you see Katara and Sokka get to this point like, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But daggers were thrown. So when we talk about her not throwing daggers at Jet, it's sometimes it's harder to have that emotional regulation and stewardship of your emotions when people are poking you in the worst way possible. Stop treating me like a little girl, then stop acting like one. Dad would never do this. You're not dad.
Yeah.
Or like they both knew the one, like they both went for the throat.
Well, and I think one of the things I think we've touched on probably a long time ago was just the nature of being good stewards of our family and our siblings, especially, right? With siblings, you are so close, and they're close in age, right? Like, being so close to people over the course of growing up with them, living in the same house, you see things. You see their insecurities. You see what they like, what they dislike, who they like, who they don't like. You see everything. You see what they care about, and you know exactly what to say in order to really say the wrong thing. I remember I woke up one morning, and I was, you know, playing around, and my sister woke up, and my sister, who I love to death, like, I said what I felt like was a light prod, but she was, you know, I made a body weight comment, and it was one of those things where, like, it was totally innocuous to me, but I said it, and it was, like, immediate, like, tears, and, like, it was one of those things where I'm like, I didn't mean for it to be that bad, but, like, it was just a joke. But I was, you know, 12. And so it was one of those things where I just didn't realize how much power I had with my, with the people that I care about and love. Right. And I think that that's something that when you are navigating something with people you really care about, you don't realize the power you have with and over the loved ones you are in relationship with. And I think that what we see is how much, like, they both cross the line, and they're like, both like, okay, we both crossed the line there, and they're able to reconcile. And that's some of the spirit of the original that I'm glad we got to see.
Yep.
Right. Of this ability to reconcile that we're seeing modeling here is really neat.
Yeah. So the idea around stewardship of relationships in general is, that's, again, that's a resource, and, again, not to be used, but because we care about others.
Yeah.
And that's something to make sure that we're cultivating well.
Well, I think, you know, just to kind of use that language again, one of the things that this is reminding of is, like, power is also a resource, and thinking about what are the kinds of power we have over others.
Power over, power with. Yep.
Like, and so thinking about, like, let's talk about Boomy. You ready?
No, I'm so not.
Yeah, let's, like, name the elephant in the room. Like, I did not like Boomy. I literally wrote in my notes, Boomy's a jackass.
Yeah.
And, you know, the...
Which, to be fair, it's an adaptation, and that can be an active choice. And not liking a character doesn't mean you don't like the way that it is. Like, that, it just means that character is a jackass, and I'm meant to think he's a jackass.
Yeah, and you're meant to think that way. Yeah. And so with that being the frame we're given, Boomy is the king, right? Boomy is the one with the most power, theoretically, in this city, right? He is, like, actively giving orders for people to make him tea, then literally taking it and throwing the cup on the ground and yelling at who did this. And, you know, Aang pokes at him and says, it was you who ordered that.
And everyone's, and then, like,
everyone freaks out, right? This isn't, like, there's fear in the room. And, you know, talk about not being a good steward of resources is, like, the emotional terrorism that is kind of happening here, where in this regard, part of me is like, okay, I see where Jet was coming from a little bit, right? Like, I see,
maybe,
like,
Boomy isn't Boomy great.
And when you think Boomy is the Boomy from the original, then maybe you're like, oh, this is really, like, bad choice. But when you kind of see it from this perspective, you're like, I kind of see where Jet's coming from. Doesn't justify the actions, but, like, I get it. You know, it's not great. It's to me an example of poor stewardship.
Yeah. When I, you know, again, it's interesting to see, sometimes we talk about, like, emotions aren't positive or negative. It's how you engage with them. And this brings me back to Sokka with the mechanist. I only gave them ideas, just meanders of things. I didn't give them any weapons. And Sokka's line of, anything can be turned into a weapon in the wrong hands. And I think that that's probably highlights this idea of stewardship the most, is here's a thing. a tool, whatever you want to look at it, and are you going to do good with it or are you going to cause harm with it? And that's ultimately up to the people who are doing the stewarding.
Well, I think there's an element...
Sorry.
I was going to say, I think there's an element of humility there that, that is kind of unexamined, right? When you have an inaccurate view of yourself and an inaccurate view of what you create and what it's capable of, then you can say that, oh, this is just whimsy, right? But, and turn it over to the Fire Nation thinking that, oh, this doesn't mean anything. But that's an inaccurate understanding of what you're capable of.
Or what they're capable of.
And what they're capable of, perhaps. And so, like, you're able to say that if you don't believe that what you're doing is good or important or useful. But we also see this, like, the opposite side of that, where he's beautifully cultivating Sokka. It might have been in the last episode. Like, Sokka's like, you're an engineer, buddy. You got this. You should be proud. Like, there's a lot of, like, talent here and passion here. And... you know, I think he shares that with Katara in this episode of like saying, hey, he told me I should be an engineer, but I'm a warrior. And so it's one of those things where it's just like we see both sides where he's such a good steward of Sokka and his emotions. But then we see this like inaccurate sense of self when he himself is doing these things. And when he's talking to Sokka, he's like, oh, they're just, you know, whimsy tools. They're just this. They're just this. And constantly... devaluing his work. And I think that if he accurately valued his work and was a good steward of his creativity, then he might have gone down a different path. You know, I wonder
because it's that concept of when is humility harmful, I guess, is an interesting question to ask.
When it's inaccurate.
And yeah,
right,
that's
well, in thinking about humility, like humility is not like being a pawn in a scheme and letting everybody walk over you. Humility, when like true humility is an accurate understanding of your
talents,
capacities, yeah. Talents, contributions, and what you're worth. And when that is outsized or missized, it becomes problematic. You either get walked all over or you begin to walk over other people.
Which is why, yeah, because cockiness is also typically not an accurate depiction.
Correct.
You yeah. saying I'm the best in the world
Sokka.
And not being. But even if you are, that still probably devalues the worth that other people bring to the table. So you yes. can be the best at something and be honest about that. But if you're also then devaluing what others are contributing,
yeah.
that's an inaccurate depiction of the talents that are in the space that is happening.
Correct. Yes.
So
big fan. Big so, fan of
appropriately, yeah, appropriately stewarding your own humility is a portion of that.
Yeah.
Any other big moments of stewardship that you want to lift up?
I guess I want to go back and do a kind of reverse stewardship. We talked about how Iroh has been stewarding Zuko a little bit, but we have this flashback of Iroh after having lost Lutin. And he's just like stone faced and in his funeral garb. And, you know, there's the line of people who were talking.
You to must him. Feel so honored that he died yeah. in service of the
yeah,
Fire
exactly.
Nation.
But Zuko says that because that's what he's supposed to say. And he comes back and he's able to really be a good steward of Iroh's, you know, grief. And say, hey, this is something that your son gave to me. It was a gift. It
yeah.
was a true gift for me, and I want you to have it because of your grief and your loss. And I thought that was just a really beautiful moment. And I think that really lives into the character as I kind of am bringing the cartoon into the adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really lives into that version of Zuko. And I think that's really beautiful.
You get these moments of choices with Zuko throughout the entire episode. And it's one that we saw in the original, and I'm glad they left it in because I think it's powerful. Both moments. You can go get the Avatar, who's with the king.
Yeah.
Or you can go after your uncle.
Yeah.
And he makes the choice to go after his uncle.
Well, and that was a season 2 choice.
Which we love.
Right?
Yeah. So growth is there. And then the same. The Avatar is flying above you on Appa. You see it.
Yeah.
You know it. and your focus is still your uncle's safety and well-being. Mm-hmm. And what a lovely choice Zuko makes.
Yeah, big fan.
And it just, it speaks to a lot of when we are stewarding the right things, when we are giving our own time and energy to the correct things, is it's a good use of your time and energy, right?
Here.
And so I appreciate that side of that for Zuko today.
Yeah. Yeehaw.
Any other, so we see the minstrels.
We do. Stewards of the cave.
Stewards of the cave. Is that what you wrote down?
Yeah.
Oh, these aren't the tunnels. Those are the tunnels.
Yeah, we're just here because of the acoustics.
I love the exposition of story that takes place there as well.
Yeah.
In there's a little bit of just, again, knowledge, right? The stewardship of knowledge is a really interesting one, to be able to share the exposition and say, like, here's the story. Here's why these tunnels exist. Here's this quote that love lights the way. And without that information, where would they have gone? So the idea of stewardship of knowledge and sharing that knowledge is in a productive way is a really,
I think, recognizing
nice moment.
That story is a resource.
Absolutely.
Right? The power of story. And
for good and for bad.
Exactly.
Right?
It shapes narratives. But like it does a lot in terms of how we respond to our context and situations. And so telling certain stories is going to affect how people respond. And telling other stories is going to change how people respond. And so understanding when and how to share and tell certain stories is important. And so
majority of the time we act on the stories that we are telling ourselves.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that is shifting our behavior. And so being good stewards of the stories that we are crafting.
Yep.
And
recognizing,
the stories that we have.
Yep.
Allows us to better navigate the world.
Hear, hear. Mm. Stewardship.
Stewardship. What fun.
We've done it.
Great. Any other thing about stewardship before we take our little break?
I think we should hark back to what you said originally and be good stewards of people's time and take a short break.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. We have a couple more segments for you, and we're glad you're still here.
Let's do it.
So, what we're talking about this time is Twee and Law.
Yeah.
Things that pull us in, things that push us away, the push and pull of life, the yin, the yang, the love, the hate, except we're going to stick with more things that are related to the show, right? So, what are the things you like, the things you dislike, the portrayals, the thoughts, the feelings?
I continue to be impressed with Zuko.
Oh yeah, I read Zuko
and the performance itself. I like these little flashbacks that we get.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the moment of Zuko handing over the medal.
Yeah, that was my probably favorite moment of the episode.
Stuff that's not in the original that I was like, this is what an adaptation should be able to provide.
Agreed.
And that's a really cool moment.
Yep.
I'm interested for people who. It also felt a little disjointed to me, and I wonder if I'm so used to the narrative of the original series that I'm really interested to see how people who've maybe aren't as familiar or felt like, did it feel like it flowed well?
Yeah.
But the moment itself, I really enjoyed.
I agree.
That aspect of it, and it was a powerful one.
I also think The Mechanist was an excellent adaptation. I thought that he did a really great job with the character, and I thought it was done well. I like the emotional I thought that was a
him turning around and giving and like trying to do good with his information.
I really appreciate the portrayal of Mechanist. Sai was a great portrayal. Big fan.
Yeah.
All right, easy this episode to think of things that pushed us away.
I hated this episode.
Yeah, this was rough.
Like, it's not So one of the things I think I'm coming to grips with is it feels like this show is really hoping that a lot of the built relationship between viewer and character has already been done by folks who watched the original series.
Yeah.
So things like having Luten so early in this episode, I think the hope is that you already feel some connection to Iroh from the animated series. Because if you don't, I don't think this moment hits. Yeah. Like, if you are just basing off your relationship with Iroh from the first three episodes to now, as a new viewer, mm-hmm. I don't think that moment hits very hard at all. I don't think Leaves of the Vine plays very, like I don't think any of that hits. So it's expecting that you do, that you've already done the emotional labor to connect to these characters based off your past experiences. But then it does something like changes the entire character of Bumi in a way that just feels so disconnected from its original counterpart.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things you're asking me to do is to have my emotional connection with characters that you want me to, but not have my emotional connection with characters that you don't want me to. And I don't think that you get to do that as a creative force in the show.
Both. Well, and it's hard because, again, like I talk about this before, but like humor is difficult for me, generally speaking, because poor humor is often at people's expense. And the things that are played for laughs from Bumi, especially, are at other people's expense. And the things that were funny in the original were still problematic, but they weren't nearly as bad as they were when they were done in the light of this new Bumi. And so I found this to be really troubling. And it was like, I was like, this is bad. Like, this is not like bad as in bad television, but like bad as in this is a bad example. This is not meant, this should not be meant to be funny. Like, this is not good.
The lessons from the original in this episode arc is that Aang is learning to look through things differently because an old friend who's a little quirky is guiding him as a mentor
putting anyone in danger.
Correct. And so
perceived danger.
It's perceived danger, but it's not like no one's in real danger. And it's to teach this lesson. He is this quirky, queer, individual who always has the best intentions, but it's just a little out there.
And like hugs Aang at the end as soon as he figures it out. And like there's this camaraderie and friendship that we see Aang like go in to like hug Bumi as soon as he figures it out, and then the guards restrain him, right? And like there's this anger and resentment from this Bumi that is like, which, and again, it's not the change that I'm mad with, it's the change that doesn't allow, like, not everything was changed, so like the context feels off
and the lesson just doesn't feel as important. The walkaway lesson from this one is with friends you can do the impossible. Like with friends you can take care of these two ideas that both seem like you can only do one or the other, and we're challenging the binary with friendship.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad lesson.
Agreed.
It just doesn't, that lesson is already exists in the show overarching. And so like having the lesson of you need to look at things differently to be successful felt like a better lesson to teach Aang in this moment.
Yeah.
And we don't get it. And then I think everything with Bumi just doesn't work for me in this episode. And a big part of that too then comes down to it is there's no whimsy.
Yeah. And that's again what makes the original the show, so endearing.
There's no whimsy. Everything it's bad stakes all the time, which is real in a time of war. But one of the reasons the original show works so well is that you're balancing the fact that like you continue to see the humanity in these children going through this process because there's moments of joy and whimsy for them throughout the course of
which
the show.
Which creates the emotional connection.
And even like Bumi recognizes that in this time of war, like whimsy has to exist.
Right?
Like play and whimsy have to exist to spark joy and to spark hope. And there's no whimsy, there's no joy in this show.
Well, it's just so...
Ever.
Yeah, and if it is there, it's colored by... If it was there, meant to be there, it's colored by something that's problematic that makes it less whimsical.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, and this is a completely... Just a second thing that was... I just found like, I was like, really? But there's a moment where Katara freezes Jet in this episode, and like covering him with water and then freezing him is so within the realms of bending. But the way it was portrayed was that like she sent a wave of cold air over him.
Right.
And I was like, that's not how it works. Like that's literally, but I don't know. That was just like a odd choice.
And again, yeah. So I try to go in being like, what's the difference between like, this is different.
Exactly.
And that's fine.
Yep.
Versus like, this is different and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that the guy who's 100 years old, who's lived this life, or over 100 years old, who has lived this life, is going to hold a grudge on a child who didn't even know he was the Avatar. Like,
I would hope not.
Until like when they were with each other the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it just seemed off, and it's just not as an enjoyable Boomy to, like, I don't feel endearing to Boomy, which is how you
jackass
how you want to be, especially if this is a guy who, and we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know where this show's going to go, but if the White Lotus plays out like it does in the original series, then, like, none of this makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Oof. But I don't know. The White Lotus might not exist in this universe, which, again, is fine.
Well, I mean, I think...
They just gave you a little tip that it maybe does.
Yeah,
we just got a hint
that
it does. Yeah. But, you know, and so, again, that's fine. If that doesn't exist, it's fine. If Boomy ends up being a part of the White Lotus in the future, that makes a whole... That doesn't...
It certainly colors the experience.
It's weird. And so, again, for me, I'm at a point where I want to see where the rest of it goes. This is not bad. Like, as a show exists, it's not bad. But it's not... Is it currently as good as other iterations of Avatar? I'm yet to be seen.
Yep.
So.
Stand by. We need that 10-episode Kuruk arc that...
Yeah. I think that's the other side of this is like, I would have preferred 10 episodes or 8 episodes of just a different Avatar story.
Well, and then none of these problems would exist.
Yeah.
Right.
You're giving me new characters. You're giving me new things.
Yep.
I just don't, and I can't imagine that the world would not have watched it.
Oh gosh. Absolutely.
And eaten it up.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's move on.
10 episodes on Kuruk. Going through the spirit world, and it needs to be
taking
scary.
On all these dark spirits.
And it needs to be scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would land for a lot of people.
But then that's the other side of things. Like, and this is even for Avatar Studios. At a certain point, you have unlimited stories you can tell. And so every time I hear, like, there's going to be a Kyoshi movie, or there's going to be a Yang Chen book.
Well, the new series is supposed to be adult Aang. And Clan.
And that can be, again, that's bridging the time between...
Or is it the movie? No, new series is the next Avatar after Korra.
Which, And that's what I'm looking for, because you've got years and years of stories to tell. Yeah. The Kyoshi novels are really good.
So good. New Roku novel coming out in July.
And I'm sure that, but also, like, give me just a different Avatar and a different
time.
Give me
Avatar number two.
Yeah. Give me two. Give me seven. Give me, like, just give me a different Avatar story to tell.
Yeah.
I don't need, like...
There's got to be reasons for it.
Build the lore up a little bit. Like, keep expanding the lore, because I don't need everything to be about the characters that I already know.
You know, one of the things we talked about, I think, in one of our live episodes recently was, you know, the part of the new wave of all of the live action stuff in the first place over the past several years has been this nostalgia that has colored capitalism. Nostalgia of, oh, we didn't used to have we weren't in a depression, we weren't in war, we weren't having a pandemic, we weren't having all of these things that were and so let's go back to the way that, like, it felt when we were kids, because that feels better. And the reason we keep on bringing back things that we've already seen is to cash in on that feeling, right? And so all of these studios are doing this because, one, you don't have to pay people as much to create new stuff. You don't have to take the risk, right? And also, you're cashing in on the nostalgia cash cow. And that's part of the reason I think that a lot of these organizations are doing this, is because it's a capitalist motive, right? There's an incentive to make money on something that takes less work. And It's interesting because that's problematic because we don't get new joy. We don't get new things. And when we don't get new things, it starts to feel stale. And so I just, that's a take we had in one of our live episode conversations. By the way, those are still happening on Patreon. Feel free to join BNB_pod.
Great. So I didn't like this episode.
And, I will admit that it was not my favorite. No, I didn't like it,
but I will continue to watch, but I'm not going to lie. There's been times it's not like I'm not the person who's like, oh, terrible. Like this is,
oh my God, cancel it.
This is the worst thing. You know, it's not, I mean, the original movie was way worse. And so like we can recognize that there's things like that moment between Zuko and Iroh, yeah. I do think really works because just even if you don't know those characters, that feels like a very sweet and genuine moment.
Well, and also again, we spent a 30 minutes talking about things that we learned, like that we talked about in
Kin
Game.
There's definitely value to it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, like there's times where I like pause it and be like, how much time do I have left in this episode?
Yeah. Fair.
And so, you know, I think
here we are, right?
There's a little bit of a difference too. Some things just Bumi looked better in animation.
Yep.
Bumi's behavior, Bumi's antics, all of it plays better when it's animated that way. It just didn't look well. It didn't look good at all. And that, you know, that is what it is. Yeah. Let's talk about devotion.
Yeah. And so,
this time through the lens of, or the element of air.
And the lens of stewardship. And again, we are kind of using our whole conversation as a guide to think about an intention we want to set with those two things in mind. So with air, with stewardship, we want to set an intention. And, you know, for me, one of the things that I was thinking about, you know, I started going on a tangent of like, you know, air pollution. And then I was thinking about smells. And then I was thinking about the bathroom. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, there's a courtesy to, you know, spray Febreze or some sort of air freshener situation or light incense or whatever it is after a particularly smelly number two, right?
You can say poop. Everybody poops. There's a book about it.
Poop.
Wrote a whole book about it.
They did, right? Everybody poops. Get it? I said but. We're talking about this bathroom air and thinking about like the courtesy of, you know, sort of like cleansing the air or using some poopery or doing something to navigate that, because often we live in community with people or a family or something where, or a partner or whatever. And it's the same thing where I think about being a good steward of the resource that we have, which is like air. But also I'm thinking about like when we use the oven and it's hot, and especially in the winter when it's a really hot oven and we've used it, like crack the door open so it is a good resource, right? Use that hot air as a resource to heat your home. And think of those things of like, how can we be more resourceful, so to speak, of the things that we're already doing. And this is kind of reminding me of that, like, again, reminding me that we're in community, that we're all breathing the same air and we're all treating it as a resource. And what are the small things that I can do on a regular basis like that to continue to be a good resource for others, and think about like my habits and what's one thing I can do and find this week that will make it a little bit better and leave it a little bit better than I found it.
Yeah, I'm in a similar vein. Thinking, you forget that air is a resource, right? Air can provide energy through fans.
Right?
I think about like laying in a hammock and feeling the swing of the hammock.
It is the season.
I think of, I was out doing yard work yesterday, and there was a really lovely breeze, which was the purpose of like legitimately cooling me down.
Yeah.
From the work that I was doing, and so I just forget that air is a resource that can be stewarded.
Yeah. Nailed it.
And so what are the other resources or things that I'm not thinking about doing, right? What are the relationship gaps that I'm not thinking about that I should be? thinking about, am I using my time and energy, the things that I have the ability to navigate, and being good stewards of my kitchen space? Not because, just because, like, oh, my wife is happier when the kitchen is cleaned, but because that's a relationship I care about.
And my
that's,
wife.
And when I when I take care of the things while I'm cooking, as opposed to leaving them till the next day, then that resource is better than I found it, mm-hmm. and it's ready for the next person to utilize it well.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
what are the little things that I'm like, I need to be hyper aware of how I am stewarding that resource, yep. and just focusing on that? Because it's so easy to not see things as resources that can benefit the whole.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm landing.
Well, and it's easy to think about priorities too, right? We always have like various priorities. Like, I just want to sit down on the couch, right? But then it's like, or I could take 5 minutes to do this, knowing that it's going to yield a lot. And so you can do a little work on the front end to save a lot of back work on the back end.
Right.
And thinking about, I can do a little work on the front end to have this beautiful resource I have that is, you know, the, you know, mood of my partner, the, you know, the experience I have to share with my partner, and thinking of that as a, something that you can be a good steward of, and thinking of the benefits that will yield. And it's not just the 5 minutes that it takes you to do that. It's the time that you get on the couch will be better, knowing that you don't have to look forward to doing something else worse later. And mm-hmm. it's just like this, again, how do you navigate those things and make those choices and set your priorities in a way that is aligned with the community you want to be in?
Absolutely. Let's jump straight to gratitude.
Yeah, we're not skipping anything. We're just going straight there.
We're going straight
it's like
there.
A beeline, you know?
Good steward of time.
Yeah, that's right.
Who are you grateful for from this episode?
We didn't talk about Teo much, but I want to be thankful and grateful for Teo.
I love that we get more time. Like, that's something I am loving, is that, like, it's not just a one-off.
Yeah.
You're only seeing him for, like, this 20-minute episode, but that he's been a part of two episodes yeah. now.
Bigger character.
And getting to know him a little bit better.
He lays into Dad in a way that is like, wow, that was tough. And it, I'm not necessarily grateful for laying into Dad, but I am grateful for, like, him standing up for what he believes in. Is like, I often believe, and I worked with teenagers for a while, and that doesn't make me an expert, but I did notice a lot that teens often think, or are more prone to thinking in, all or nothing thinking, or, it's also called black and white thinking or binary thinking. And Teo has a strong sense of what is right and what is wrong, and calls Dad out lying to him, and says, are you lying about this too?
Or do the secret tunnels not exist, you liar?
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where I really admire that about people who have a strong sense of justice, because oftentimes the nuance that comes with age becomes really gritty and grimy to walk through, and it becomes muddy. And right now it feels so clean and, like, I don't want to call it naive, it just feels pure. Right. Of like, that is what it should be. We should just have this innate sense of what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful. And I'm just grateful for the reminder.
Yeah. Teo's fun to see over the last two episodes. Mine's going to be Zuko.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's something about just making the right choices when the choices are in front of you. And I just really appreciate that.
Mm.
Whether it's comforting Iroh,
Choosing
Iroh over the Avatar, or recognizing when Iroh shows up, like, I may never come back. This may be a journey that takes forever.
Yeah.
Home is where I am, and, like, and him recognizing that, like,
yeah,
that's meaningful.
Mm.
Cause sometimes people show up for us and we don't see it, or we ignore it.
Yeah.
And I think this is a moment where Zuko notices and yeah. acknowledges. And Iroh makes a little joke about, like, I got all the tea I need, but there's something to be said about, like, I recognize when people are showing up for me. And then he shows up for Iroh. And I think that that's, it's the power of showing up is really, I think about, you know, it's not about like being the perfect parent or the perfect partner. Half the battle is like, are you present?
Yeah.
And if you're present, then like, yeah, you might mess some other stuff up, but people are going to know like they were there.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's
here, here.
It's a beautiful moment. Four episodes down, four episodes to go. We've got more coming.
Yeah, we've hit the future point.
Halfway, and we'll see what the show has to hold for us. I've heard the fifth episode may be a rough one to watch.
I will admit, I struggled.
So I don't know what that means.
In a very different way than I struggled in this episode.
Fair.
So, just very different.
So we'll see. But hey, we are excited for the journey. We love being curious.
Yep.
And we love approaching things with the best assumptions, right? And so we will continue to do that with Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender next week.
That's right.
I'm Sunshine.
And I'm Ben.
And thank you for listening.